This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Dana Barros, Kenny Smith tells a great story on that open court show on NBA TV about how Dana Barros, who used to play for the Sixers, he could not guard him. Didn't he play for the Celtics for a little while too? Yeah.
Yep.
George Bjerkstrand won Most Improved Player.
Well, he was. He also won like the field goal percentage.
Wow.
Like,
the guy from My Giant with Billy Crystal.
He also wasn't that commercial. Was it Jordan Brand with the Murasan cologne? Smells like cabbage.
Isaac Austin from the Miami Heat, I don't even remember him. Alan Henderson, who I was trying to say, with the Atlanta Hawks, I remember he played in Indiana under Bobby Knight. Daryl Armstrong, I remember him. He played with the Magic. He was a little guy. He was the only guy that ever did a layup in the slam dunk contest. If you remember that. He lost the ball going up and he laid it in. Jalen Rose, that's a good example in 2000. He may have reached his prime at that point, so that's kind of like what you were talking about. And then McGrady won it in 01. That's a good example of what Paul George did, you know?
Yeah, because I'm a great high school kid. Came out, was it 95?
Yeah,
so
was Jermaine O'Neal, you know, 03 was Gilbert Arenas, Zebo in 2004, Bobby Simmons. Wow, Bobby Simmons. Boris Diaw in 06, Monte Ellis in 07, Hedo Turkoglu in 2008. That was probably his best year. Danny Granger in 2009, Aaron Brooks in 2010, Kevin Love in 2011, Ryan Anderson with the Pelicans, Paul George, Goran Dragic, and then Jimmy Butler last season.
So yeah, you can see, you know, in case of Jalen Rose, it's like, well, you've been here for a while, but now you've started to be the player
yeah,
we think you can.
The same in Orlando.
Yeah, and as opposed to you get young players, Jimmy Butler, Kevin Love, and it's like, oh, you know what? You guys have turned up. You are now gone from being very good to being a superstar.
Pick?
I know you're going to probably say Rudy.
Nope.
Gobert. Okay, then I think it you know, I've still, you know, of course you're going to be, you could probably guess mine being Nurkic, but if you just look at his numbers as a, you know, per 36, it's just crazy.
His
upside.
There has to be offensive improvement there for the media to notice it. But now you do make a good point there that offense has exploded so much in the NBA that defensive specialists are more noticeable now. You are right about that. So maybe if the defense is just as effective in this upcoming season as it was late last season, and he does it through an entire season, and he's like top three in blocks, and he's top five in rebounding, maybe that'll be enough to get enough recognition, along with the Utah Jazz needing to improve in their win-loss record, which will be hard in the West.
Yep.
My pick is Giannis Antetokounmpo, because if you look at the stats, it's not... he's not blow away great yet, but I think that we might see that this season. I think that he'll take that next step in Milwaukee.
Also, you could make a case for Wiggins if he just comes in and just starts dropping 25s.
But his numbers as a rookie past the All-Star break were very, very good. That's the weird part about most improved. You need to go from like 0 to 8, or maybe from like 3 to 9. You know, that's kind of like what Paul George did. He went from like a 3 to a 9. You know, can Andrew Wiggins be that kind of a player?
I think he could if he becomes one of those top, you know, top 15 players, top 20 players in the league all of a sudden out of nowhere and just commands that team.
How many players you remember that were like that went from like rookie, because like most people consider like at a rookie, like when you have a fantasy draft, the rookies are all at the bottom because they haven't proven anything, so they're automatic zeros. How many players do you remember that like went from 0 to 10 within a year after winning rookie of the year? Like right off the top of your head, just think of maybe a few.
Derek
Shaq,
Rose,
you know,
Shaq, Bryant. Wall until he.
I don't want to.
Kobe was horrible his first few years.
Well, his second year, he made the All-Star game, but he wasn't like I don't he wasn't the best shooting guard in the NBA, you know.
Yeah, that's why I was like that was sort of like a pit. Like that was, you know, I didn't think that was
Shaq
warranted.
Shaq was the best center in the NBA by year two. Well, there was Hakeem, there was Patrick Ewing. Maybe I have to take that back, you know. But yeah, that's a. I don't think we're gonna see that kind of a player though this year, where they go from like, you know, winning rookie of the year to going all the way to like, oh wow, you might be one of the best players in the NBA. I don't know if Wiggins can do that yet in Minnesota.
You don't know, but that team is sort of built for his explosion. Oh, just, you know, people who were dominant after their first year, just to wrap that up. You forgot Iverson Duncan.
Iverson was dropping 50 his rookie year. That was insane.
But you're saying who after winning rookie of the year was...
No, I'm saying to your point, like, by the time he was a rookie, you were like, wow, this guy...
And most recently was with the person we talked about last week, Blake Griffin.
That's another good one.
Because the first year it was like he was good, but you know coming back from the injury, and then all of a sudden the second year, bam.
After 2013, did he need to kind of take another year or two to get there? LeBron too.
Anthony Davis didn't win Rookie of the Year.
Lillard did. You're right.
Damian Lillard. I'm like.
Well, not necessarily. They won Rookie of the Year. Just had good rookie years then.
Oh, yeah. So there's Davis. No, because he was still developing. This past year is when it was open, and this year
and
should be just
Michael
destroyed.
Jordan, he broke his foot his sophomore year in the NBA. You know, no, he came back and dropped 63 on the Celtics in the playoffs because he's just, that's how great he is. Let's move on to another award. Coach of the Year. I like this award because it means you're going to get fired in 3 years. Who do you have here?
I got Spoelstra.
Spoelstra. Eric Spoelstra. I didn't know you were eating Italian.
We differ greatly on the Heat. I say they're back. You say
that
they're
means
done.
Spoelstra's going to be gone.
In three years?
He peaked with the team he's got this year. And then they're going to start slowly going down.
Oh, of course he is. Once Dwayne Wade goes, and you know, unless they get somebody to replace him,
do you think Dwayne Wade's holding them back?
Not as much. In a year or two, maybe, but right now there's nobody he's holding down. There's nobody that's not getting minutes because of him. I think even with his injuries and the time constraints and whatnot, he still puts them as far as further than without him.
Why is Frank Vogel with the Indiana Pacers? Because I think the Pacers are going to surprise everyone in the East.
See, that's – I can't – like I said last week, I can't – you could tell me they're going to be one of the five worst teams. I'm like, yeah, they really are terrible.
Train of thought here, and it's not necessarily because I think they're going to be great. It's this. The Coach of the Year is awarded to a guy who the media feels like did more with what they were given. They also give it the award to coaches that adapt to the players that are not exactly fitting of the style that they're used to coaching, but they adapt to it anyway and have success with it. With Frank Vogel, he's a defensively minded coach, but he's going to have to play a little faster. If Indiana has success with a faster style, Vogel's going to get a lot of credit for that.
If Vogel wins Coach of the Year, then Most Improved should go to Ian Mahimi.
Ian Mahimi?
Because he's the current center on that team, and that means he's done something.
How about we give Most Improved Player to Paul George because he played six games and only averaged about 12 points and six rebounds?
Okay, well then by default, the Most Improved Player should go to Randall.
That would be a second one. What does that mean if you win Most Improved Player twice?
That would just be Comeback Player of the Year. But that case should go to Julius Randall. Julius Randle played 7 minutes last year before breaking his leg.
What do you expect out of Julius Randle this year? Like, can you consider him a rookie? And if he were considered that, could he win Rookie of the Year?
He should be considered a rookie, but by NBA standards, he's not.
Like, can't you, like, wouldn't that be considered, like, a red shirt? Like, a medical red shirt?
I mean, 7 minutes, they're you know, that's sort of cheesing out by the NBA.
I think he's
going to
get a lot of minutes there, you know, with Bass and with Roy Hibbert there. I think he's going to get a lot of minutes in L.A.
Oh, yeah, he'll get a lot of minutes. And
since we floated over to that topic, Rookie of the Year, was Randall kind of in your radar there, if he were considered?
No. Rookie of the Year will be a two-horse race between Moutier and Okafor.
I don't know either guy.
Okafor will get
it. Go ahead.
Okafor has carte blanche. That team is, you know, now finally the rumblings are coming out that not everyone's happy with this constant. We stick with the plan of still no improvement with no signs
of
improvement.
Well, that's because, I heard the story that Wells Fargo is pulling their name.
I don't know that, but
so
that wouldn't be related.
They painted the Wells Fargo name the same color as the court with the outline so you can barely see it. Because there's some sort of dispute between the Sixers and Wells Fargo.
That wouldn't be... Don't the Flyers play there as well?
Oh, man. I'm going to have to get Brad Woodling on this. Because he's a diehard Sixers fan, which means that he's been hiding as an NBA fan for the last two or three seasons. So I don't really talk to him about the NBA a lot. Unless I need to laugh at him. Sorry, Brad. Mine is Stanley...
So that would be an incident with the naming rights, not just the team. Yeah, that would be if the Flyers play there too. So that's something bigger than Wells Fargo pulling their name for a crappy team.
What's your angle on Moutier?
What I saw in the preseason of him is
he's going to get a lot of minutes.
He's going to get a lot of minutes, and there's no reason he can't become a top five point guard.
He looks like a point guard. A strong point guard.
Yeah, the John Wall, you know, the John Wall clone.
Yeah, he plays a little bit like Wall. He you know, in the early days when Wall first was with the Wizards, when they still had those ugly blue uniforms, you know, the MJ era uniforms, Wall was seen to me like a player who wanted to be a facilitator, but he didn't know how to do it yet because he was naturally a scorer in high school and AAU. So, and I feel like with Moutier, he needs to reach that first stage of, you know, I can score. I'm a naturally good scorer, so I'm going to do this. But I'm going to try to facilitate more, even though I don't know how to do it yet. You know, he's sort of in that in-between. He's going to have to learn at some point by year three. Am I a passer? Am I a facilitator? Am I a scorer? John Wall decided I'm a passer. Do you think Moutier can do that?
Yes, I think he can. So who's your pick then?
Stanley Johnson
of
the Detroit Pistons. I think he's going to take that spot away from Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I think he's looked really, really good in almost every organized game I've seen him in involving the Pistons. He can shoot threes, very athletic, very strong. He looks like a small forward. He's not a guard. He's not a point forward. He's not a stretch forward. He is a small forward. So he will be the guy that is guarding the top small forwards in the game on defense, and he can play a little bit of defense too. So, you know, he also plays number three, so he looks like a skinny Ben Wallace. Every time I watch him, I'm like, is that Ben Wallace? But no, Stanley Johnson, I think that was a steal. I think he got picked at number eight, and I think that was a steal for them. There's a couple of other ones that we didn't mention, you know, guys like Karl Anthony Towns and Kristaps Porzingis. You see any chance there?
No, Kristaps, I don't see why he wouldn't be a good player, but he's not going to win Rookie of the Year. They're going to...
In New York?
I think they're going to limit hits early on. He's not going to have... He'll be on the court, but, you know, I think he has to have him. If Derek Fisher doesn't seem like one of those, oh, I'll just play rookies. I think he's one of those old-school coaches of you need to earn your time.
I think
D'Angelo
Russell's going to struggle. The guy who I think is going to wind up getting... going to look good in the minutes he's given, but he's not going to play a lot of minutes, is Mario Hezonja with the Orlando Magic.
See, that brings up an interesting point, which I will address on bold predictions.
Devin Booker, I think, is going to get a lot of play with the Suns because he's a good shooter.
Yeah, but Devin Booker, how is he any different than Archie Goodwin, who is the same player?
He's a sharp shooter, pretty much. That's really the main reason.
Yeah, he's a sharpshooter who doesn't really do anything else right now.
He's gotten a lot of play in preseason. Rashad Vaughn with the Bucks. Now, Rashad Vaughn hurt his knee in the middle of college play, so not a lot of people saw him at UNLV. But he might be one where you're like, where did he come from? You know?
He might be, and, you know, it's... That's the problem with Milwaukee is their roster is just a floating enigma. It's like, okay, well, in theory, that should be Chris Middleton's spot. But if you move Chris to the three, you're moving Giannis to the four.
The other ones watching, Justice Winslow with the Heat, and the other one...
Winslow's going to get no time.
Terry Rudy's an injury with Boston, correct?
It was something little.
Kelly Oubre, because if they need three-point shooting, they're going to have to go with him in Washington. And then there's Bobby Portis, who I think Fred Hoiberg's in love with him in Chicago.
Bobby Portis has been destroying preseason. And
but
everybody's
then again,
insane.
So did Kelvin Cato.
Yeah, that's the problem is everybody, he's like, well, he's not going to get any minutes under Hoiberg's system. Not with, you know, you're going to be starting Mitrodic and Gasol, and then you got Noah, and you have McDermott, who's still there. And
who is going to make their first All-Star game this year?
That is a tough
mine's
one.
Mine's kind of easy because it's sort of one of those, I can't believe he hasn't made the All-Star game type of players.
Kawhi who's Leonard. That? He hasn't
Kawhi
made an All-Star
Leonard
game?
Has made an All-Star game before. Can you believe that? I'll give you
a
couple. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Think he'll make it.
Rudy Gobert has not made the All-Star game.
Well, he has from his 1 year.
He didn't play his. I don't even remember him his rookie year. That was in 2014. I don't even remember it. It was almost like last year was his rookie year in a ways.
Yeah.
Any chance a rookie makes the All-Star game? Any. It rarely happens. I think Blake Griffin did it in 2009.
It would have to be from the East. And I don't see anyone...
So it would either be kind of a veteran who hasn't gotten his shot yet, you know, on one of these teams, or it would be somebody who's already proven himself, but it just so happens that they haven't made the All-Star game yet. Got somebody like a Kawhi Leonard.
Kawhi Leonard, maybe... DeMar DeRozan, has he made one?
He did. I think he went to the All-Star game last season.
Because I'm like, with this new system, everybody's sort of expecting the Raptors to tank, but let's say they take off with this newfound style, and he, you know, that's a team that's not going to stay where they are. They're going to be really better or really worse.
I don't think Dragic has ever made the All-Star game. Do you think that one would be one to keep an eye on?
I don't. To keep an eye
Victor
on.
Victor Oladipo with the Magic.
No,
just
I don't.
The way you said that.
See, the problem with that is if you've been watching preseason, they still play him at point guard.
They just don't. They don't want to play Elfrid Payton. I don't know why.
I don't know whether Payton's injured or what's going on with him, but
I
saw Oladipo with the point. I'm like, he's been horrible his whole career there, and.
You can't say Jimmy Butler because he's already been there. Mozgov?
No, because Kevin Love will get it for Cleveland.
I don't think Andre Drummond's been to the All-Star game yet.
Then Drummond can make it.
It's just falling. I think that's really the most important ones that I see off the top of my head. So which pick would you settle with?
It's Kawhi.
Yeah, I agree there. I mean, is there any chance he doesn't make the All-Star team?
Oh, yeah, there's a great chance he doesn't make the All-Star team. The fact the West is so completely stacked.
Even though he's saying that he's planning to stay in Detroit, because we were just talking about him, what is Andre Drummond worth? I think we talked about this in the summer, but let's revisit it.
I think he's still a max guy.
So why are they at an impasse right now? Is it the same thing like Tristan Thompson?
I don't think they're at an impasse. They're both saying it would be smart for me to sign after you sign other people. We saw what, you know, Kawhi waited, and by him waiting, you got Aldridge.
Well, and that's the thing, too. He's not really betting on himself because he didn't sign. He's not at a point where he has to sign the tender. You know, when you sign the tender like Greg Monroe did, his former teammate, then you're betting on yourself. You know, Tristan.
Yeah,
Tristan,
he's just saying.
I think that was one of the reasons for Tristan Thompson's situation. I don't think he wanted to bet on himself.
I wouldn't. Players are always willing to bet on themselves. I didn't think everyone around him was like, no, on that team you're gonna be buried.
Best offseason move, just one. Just give me one.
The way the preseason has gone, watching Derek Williams at New York, he seems to be
low value's best move. I like those.
Well, that's what I sort of go by is, you know, last year with Indiana getting CJ Miles and Stuckey for nothing. It's just you can say all the big signings, oh, who's gonna be the great one? Oh well, you know, who the easy money it would be Aldridge.
Mine was the Rockets getting Ty Lawson for basically nothing.
See, I don't think that's gonna work as great as everybody thinks. I feel like Lawson's the missing piece.
I feel like that all they needed was a good point guard, and they got one.
A lot of yes, he was a missing piece, but also he was the one that created the locker room division. He was the cancer in Denver, and he comes with baggage and off the court problems. That's a lot to. Hope he gets everything
so
back
didn't
together.
Go with a big one, like maybe something like LaMarcus Aldridge going to the Spurs or Paul Pierce going to the Clippers.
That's the obvious one, and I can't do the obvious picks. It has to be, who would be the best signing, right? Preseason, Derek Williams, Amir Johnson to the Celtics seems to be, providing that inside the depth toughness they didn't have. It's just. Under the radar signings.
One that you and I liked was Marco Bellinelli going to the Kings.
Bellinelli to the Kings is a great signing. Lance Stevenson to the Clippers. The people you get to fill the rosters who all of a sudden become now players.
You spent all of last season when we did our first year crapping on Lance for going to the Hornets because you didn't think it was going to work. Now he's with the Clippers and you like it. I mean, is it really just the good fortune of going from one team to another that takes a player's abilities and says, well, this can work here even though it didn't work there?
It's, you look at his numbers. Okay, he's a player. He's averaging 13-6. Oh, well, let's make him a superstar now. Why is he only averaging 13-6? Well, maybe that's what he's going to give you, and you expect him to be that number one guy, which he can't be. Now, okay, you're the sixth man. You're the fourth option on your team. You might even say fifth, depending upon who's on the court.
Worst move, I'll give you an obvious one, and that was the Mavericks not getting DeAndre Drummond. That'd be a great player if you put him together, but no. The Mavericks not getting DeAndre Jordan was huge.
I thought you also said Magic.
I said Magic. I said the Mavericks. I just said it too fast.
Mavericks not
getting Jordan was enormous. That was enormous. That killed that team. Killed him.
Charlotte doubling down on mediocrity, I think, is a bad choice. Portland giving Al-Farouq Aminu $20 million.
Signing Enes Kanter.
The Thunder re-signing Enes Kanter for the hip price, I want to say yes.
The Kings trading two right swaps and two first-round picks to dump salary.
Who knows? Let's say it pays off, and those are high 20 picks. Those are nothing. Those are essentially useless if they're...
It's still a bad move.
I'm betting on myself move. I know I've torn my ACL twice, but I'm going to bet on myself this year.
Would you consider Cleveland's overspending a bad move overall, or the safe move?
The one thing is people have short memories. So everyone's going to say that's a smart move because this is the year you need to buy the championship. Because San Antonio, the Clippers have reloaded. And that's why I said it's a four-team race because I don't think Houston could beat any of those four teams.
Give me a potential disappointment. It could be a player. It could be a team.
Chicago. Chicago is going to falter early, and there's going to be rumblings to get rid of Noah, or if Bobby Portis starts playing well like you think he will, and I think he will as well, and that team starts off slow, there's going to be trouble, because Thibodeau, you know, he wore his team out and he wore out the welcome with the media, but he still won. And if you don't win immediately there in Chicago, there'll be trouble.
Mine is the Toronto Raptors. Like, I'm not saying that the Atlantic Division has improved so much. I just don't know how good the Raptors can really be with what they have. You know, I know there's a lot of talk about Kyle Lowry and, you know, how he's looked, you know, with the weight loss. DeMar DeRozan, I think he's already peaked as a player. Jonas Valanciunas got paid, but we're still waiting to see something. And I don't think the team was as deep as people were claiming that it was last season. And I think it's starting to show that they're really just they just don't have a lot of depth on their bench like people are saying they are. And their identity is an offensively minded identity, but they're in an Eastern Conference where all the good teams are good defensive teams. So.
Yeah, that's why they're trying to change it on the fly by getting rid of Lou Williams and getting,
you know, more defensive guys, like, you know, like drafting Norman Powell and DeLon Wright and getting Bismack Biyombo, and, you know,
Bismack Biyombo is also could be a potentially great signing.
What about Splitter going to the Hawks?
I don't. They have Splitter and Walter Tavares are coming in, but as long as you have Al Horford and Millsap there, they're not going to get playing time. They're just going to be, you know, they're just going to spell them.
Yeah, the other part about the Raptors is also Dwayne Casey. Like, I just don't think Dwayne Casey is much for a coach. And you sometimes for teams, you can only go as far as the coach can bring you or help bring you.
That is the case, but let's say they fire him early in the season, which, you know, would probably be the next category. Who's the first coach to get fired? I think we probably both agree it might be Casey or maybe Vogel.
That's a good one. So you would say Dwayne Casey?
Oh, he currently has the hottest seat, I think, of all.
What about Jeff Hornacek in Phoenix?
No, because I think. Management has shook up the team too much for him to be on the hot seat, because it's like, well, I was doing something, then you blew up my team. But so who? I can't think of anyone who has a hotter
Steve
seat right now.
Charlotte. Fred Brown, 76ers. His isn't hot because nobody's at the games.
Nobody. You know. I haven't seen any player development from him. Well, he hasn't had any players because they trade him away every other week. Yeah, but I don't see this guru that he was supposed to be. As for Charlotte, I don't think they just, in the end, nobody's going to care about that team.
Give me a team-related storyline, whether it be a rivalry or, you know, teams on a quest to win a ring or maybe teams that potentially could fall apart. Give me one storyline that you're kind of paying attention to the most with a specific team.
Ironically, it's Orlando. If Aaron Gordon plays as well as he's been playing in the preseason, you now have a problem with him, Hisanja, and then big money re-signing there.
Tobias Harris, you mean?
Tobias Harris. That's a logjam. Somebody's got to go.
For me... It's two of the teams that we had mentioned last week in the previews. I think the pressure's on big for the Cleveland and the LA Clippers. I mean, this is the year where it feels like you got to do it now. You got to get to a finals, or you got to win a championship, or this whole legacy is going to be a failure.
Also, we've already mentioned Chicago and their potential problem with Bobby Portis and Joakim Noah. We've mentioned many episodes how he's past his prime, we think.
Well, that's a good one, and I'll lead off with it, and it's potential star player that will be traded. I think it's Joakim Noah.
Joakim Noah, I would also say Zach Randolph. Let's say that team finally does falter, as
we've been
expecting.
That is essentially blowing up that team. That's what that is.
Well, you have Mike Connolly, who I think he's a free agent next year.
I get that. What I'm saying is that the balance of that team is so delicate that letting Randolph go ruins it. it ruins the chemistry.
But let's say the team starts doing bad. Let's say Gasol's out for the year, and you know, Dave Joerger's could be on the hot seat because, like, well, what have you done? You're just a first round exit guy,
and that's what they would be.
That's what we're projecting them again this year. Well, you know, partly because we unfortunately project Oklahoma City as a first round exit because they're going up. You know, the 4-5 matchup right now potentially is Houston, Oklahoma City.
It's going to be really tough in the West. I mean, we talk about how there is parity at some point in the NBA. There's parity to a degree, and that's in the middle of the pack in both conferences, and then in some cases, it's in almost the entirety of the conference. You know, in the West, when you go from like slots 4 to 8, or maybe past that 9 and 10, there is room to move up and down. But when you get to like the top 3, I mean, those are the best teams, and you're really not going to shake it. You know, in the East, it's really just a few teams, also maybe just 2. You know, and then, you know, the thing is, for these teams that are at the top, you know, they're not going to change as much as you think they are. And that's just the case in the NBA every single year. And people say, well, man, the NBA is boring. The same teams are always good. But I do feel like in the West that the same teams that are always good got even better.
Well, yeah, the funny thing is, oh, the same teams are always good. So the Clippers were always good. Golden State wasn't a laughing stock of the league. You know, having, you know, the funny thing is, Golden State. You look at, actually, just look at any of these teams that are making the playoffs. Golden State, what do you have? You have Curry was the seventh or eighth pick or something. Klay Thompson was the 11th pick. The year before that, they had Ekpe Udo was the 6th pick. You know, you have a lot of lottery. Look at Washington. Bradley Beal was the 3rd pick. Wall was the 1st. Otto Porter failure was the 3rd pick. You have a lot of lottery teams from a couple, you know, 5-7 years ago, where now things have changed.
The difference here is that a lot of these teams' success have, even though it had a lot to do with different dealings and different moves that came together and crystallized at the same time, you can really pinpoint it for the most part to one moment. You know, like Malcolm Gladwell did that book, The Tipping Point. You know, every team's got a tipping point. Even the Spurs, you can go all the way back to 1997 with Tim Duncan. That was the tipping point. You know, that's why they've been so great for so long, because that's how long that foundation has been set since they drafted Duncan way back in the late 90s. With Golden State, you could really just come down to just saying that it was getting Curry after David Kahn of the Timberwolves passed on him twice. You know, and then with the Clippers, it was the Chris Paul trade, which was supposed to be the Lakers, and it didn't happen because David Stern shot it down. And then with the Rockets, it was the James Harden trade that nobody knew was going to happen until about 2 weeks before the season started.
Yep, that's what it, you know, and again, look at Oklahoma City, Durant number 2, Westbrook was 4, Harden was the 3rd pick. Ibaka was 23rd, but...
Well, do you think we focus too much on that one move or those two moves, or do you think that really is what... That's really what puts together all the other moves?
That's what puts together all the other moves, and that's what Philly is banking on, is if we get that Durant, we get that Westbrook...
Ben Simmons, maybe.
You know, then the next few picks down the line are going to be, okay, we have, let's say, Simmons... with the number 6 pick Noel, number 2 pick, or 3 pick Okafor.
You're an LSU guy, too. After getting a glance at him, do you see Ben Simmons as that kind of guy?
I'm an LSU football guy. Basketball, they're usually... Ben Simmons is just another long line of their 6'10 athletic guys who... I don't know if they could really play offensively yet.
He's really good at sharing the ball at his size. And he's a very good defender.
Okay, that's the thing. Like, I haven't seen any of that yet, but just off the history of, you know, Stromile Swift, Tyrus Thomas, just big, super athletic guys. And yeah, all I know, just, you know, from now, just the college storyline is how everybody is sort of like, this Kentucky team isn't as good as people think they are.
Do you have any idea how hard it is going to be to top last year? You literally cannot. The only way you can top it is by going undefeated and winning the whole thing.
But I mean, everybody knew they're going to take a step back. But I think a lot of people are like, well, this might not even be a top.
Well, also the other teams in the SEC are slowly getting better. You know, they got Avery Johnson in Alabama. I don't know how good of a signing that was, because that's the weird thing. NBA coaches, you would think NBA coaches are smarter than college coaches because they have to deal with more ego and they have to juggle more balls. But the problem is that we've seen NBA coaches go to college and stink.
The thing is, they don't know recruiting. The players come to them. It's not. It's for an NBA coach, it's the GM's job to bring you talent. You could say, I sort of like this guy, but you have to now tell this kid, I need you more than anybody else, and you don't want to go to North Carolina because you want to come here.
Speaking of recruiting, let's talk about an old favorite of yours in Boston, Rick Pitino. Give me your quick take on the Louisville scandal.
Isn't that everywhere? Hasn't there been... That's usually a football story.
What they don't have is a whistleblower. Louisville had a whistleblower. That's the difference.
Well, that's the problem. Is you have a whistleblower, so either he's going to go down as allowing this to happen, sort of like the Tarkanian UNLV Lawless era, or the Jim Boeheim Paterno... You've lost control of your program. You don't know what's going on.
Which act do you think is more punishable, in your opinion? I know this is more of a political angle, but just your take.
There's a fine line because you always have that fall guy, but between you and
Andre McGee,
you always have that fall guy for you. You never like even like Ohio State with Tressel and the. The prior thing with the autographs and whatnot, you always have somebody in between you. And the problem is, okay, now do you say that's now you've lost control of the program, or just you that smart moves of having
the
somebody?
The key difference was that Tressel, at the end of the day, fessed up. You know, and he got punished for lying. He got show cause, which is that punishment where, you know, basically you're unhirable by the NCAA standards for like 3 years.
Same thing with Bruce Pearl.
But the moment his show cause ended, what happened? He got signed literally the next day by Auburn, you know?
He got signed because Auburn has a terrible program.
Does that mean show cause is kind of a joke, because the moment these people are able to be hired, they're going to be hired? Like Jim Tressel.
They're going to be hired, but...
You know?
Oh, he'll be hired. Oh, look at it. Was it Bobby Petrino at Arkansas? Yeah. You know, had a mysterious, you know...
The motorcycle accident, Yeah,
and then all of a sudden, who hires? Well, he got hired, but yeah, that was Western Kentucky.
And then,
okay, now he's back to Louisville. Or...
Yeah, he had to lower his standards. You know, he had been to Louisville.
That's the thing, is you need to take a lower tier job and work your way back. The same thing, Mike Leach at Texas Tech. Now you're at Washington State.
Yeah, I know this ain't a football podcast, but he's weirdly turned it around at Washington State. It took him a long time though, because
that team had nobody there.
Bad, you know, under Paul Wolf. That was just, man, when Mike Price left there, and, you know, it's so weird. We were just talking about sexual favors at Louisville. Mike Price got fired at Alabama before he even started because I think he was using the budget to, like, pay for strip clubs. Is that right? He was visiting.
Something
he was
like
spending
that.
Time at strip clubs, and he had gotten photographed or something. It was right around the same time that Larry Eustace was kissing co-eds at a party, and it got on the internet. You know, that was the true beginning of the impact of social media with sports. It was when those two coaches got fired, you know, for things that were really just hearsay back in the day.
Yeah, there was always the rumors of, oh, that was, you know, that's the party school and all that. Yeah, they do that, which, of course, they that was Colorado in the 90s or the late 80s, the same problem. But it's just, you know, so it has it just, again, you have the whistleblower who's bitter for whatever reason.
We were just talking about this social media player most likely to get vined, like the biggest vine, you know, the ones that were kind of the biggest off the top of my head were the Otto Porter play, Blake Griffin with the spin around dunk on Aaron Baines.
I was going to say there's no reason it shouldn't be Griffin and Giannis.
Okay. Well,
just those.
What
two
about give me a crazy
brain
fart? Something that you would just not even think.
J.R. Smith. He'll do something. Give him Nick Young and Lou Williams together. Give him time.
I think this is a random one. I can't even name a player. I think it's going to be somebody farting on the court and everyone running away.
Kaminsky.
I don't think we've seen like a really like popular Vine. We've seen the one of LeBron farting on the bench, and I can't remember who was next to him, but he's like, ooh, and he runs away, and LeBron is smiling. I think that's the next one. I think, you know, the funny part, the one thing I really like about Vine and Twit did and Facebook and memes is that you have to catch them at the most, like, innocuous of moments. It's not, like, the kind of thing where it's, like, publicized really highly. You kind of have to search for it. Like, the Otto Porter play was a very random Bulls-Wizards game in the middle of the season that nobody watched. You know, it was just funny because he wasn't watching, you know?
So, you know, they just need a camera on the moment at the time.
Media, I mean, anytime you do something like that, everyone's going to see it. And God help you if it's on a big stage. Like, you know, Russell Wilson.
Yep, so I think that covers all the awards, I think. Oh, champion.
Two more. League MVP.
Oh, League MVP, I thought we already said should be Anthony Davis.
I didn't say mine yet.
I thought you'd agree, because it's just what. Anytime you can mention Anthony Davis, you'll be like, sure.
I think it's going to be Blake Griffin. I think Blake Griffin is going to increase his numbers again. I think he's going to play about as well as he did in the postseason. If you watch him in the postseason, Blake Griffin was the best player on the court, you know, against the Spurs and the Rockets. You know, so I feel like the Clippers are going to take that next step with Griffin as the leader instead of Paul. Even though I know Griffin isn't a leader, like, in terms of, like, locker room, but I think on the court he's the best player. And it's going to start.
All right. What's the last one?
Give me your finals prediction.
I'm going to say the Clippers. The Clippers, if they don't win it this year, they should just dismantle the team.
I think the Spurs are going to beat Cleveland.
Clippers, Cavs, Spurs, Cavs. I think we both agree. We don't see Golden State repeating.
It's so hard to repeat. I mean, even when the Heat did it in 2013, it was so hard for them to do that.
It was so hard because, like, you know, we mentioned last week, just every team, that's the game you need to win. As long you can win, you can lose every game, but as long as you beat the defending champs, okay, you can hang your head on that.
Can you make the case that three-peating is easier than winning the second one? Yes. Now, the Heat failed in 2014, but and I know the Lakers struggled with the Kings the third time, but it felt to me like it was a little – there was more attrition getting to that second title and, you know, setting up that legacy that you want to win this many in a row than it is to win that third one. Because the third one feels like you're tacking it on, you know?
Because usually with the second one, you need to face that, you know, the lethargy, the championship, the increased pressure. The third one, you have you've now established the, okay, now we know we're serious, which is why, you know, San Antonio always would falter the second year because they just got, like, lazy and, you know, they're like, well, we need to rest and we need our pace, and everyone's like, no, you are our game of the season.
The hard part, obviously, is holding on to that status with the free agency, with the injuries, three seasons in a row. That's incredibly hard. You know, that's why it always trips people up. Outside of when Michael did it twice and when Shaq did it in the 2000s. I mean, the Spurs can't even repeat. That's why I mentioned that. Like, the Spurs, for a team as mentally strong as the Spurs, to not be able to win two titles in a row, that just shows how hard it is to do it. You know, but
yep.
It's just been fun. It's been fun. I'll give you a couple of previews for this upcoming week as we are in the month of November. Indiana at Detroit in November. Nothing happens when the Pacers play the Pistons in the Palace, huh?
Oh, those times are long gone. These are two. Those were two, you know, strong teams. Now,
I think
just
the only one who's still there that was involved is Rick Mahorn. Because he does the radio games or the telecast, I believe. The Clippers go to the Golden State Warriors on Wednesday, November the 4th. On November the 5th, the one I'm watching is Oklahoma City at Chicago. You're not big on Chicago, though. You feel like things might not.
I'm not big on Chicago. That's why there's another Chicago match with Chicago, I think Orlando, okay. I'm more interested in, because Orlando, this is sort of their test of, are you going to take that step forward, or are you just going to be as horrible as we expect you to be?
Yeah, that was one of the best highlights. I think it was when Vucevic did that dunk on Pau Gasol. You know, I've seen that on a couple of compilations. That was last season. And that was in Chicago. Washington at Boston on Friday. Will you be there? November the 6th. all.
No.
Why not?
No, I am... we're not going to get into it, but I'll be seeing a lot less games this year.
Saturday, November the 7th. One I'm kind of keeping an eye off. Defensive struggle, I guess. The Grizzlies at the Jazz. We'll see a lot of big boy ball there. Indiana at Cleveland. So we'll see Paul George and LeBron James face off for the first time in quite a while on November the 8th, Sunday. And then Monday, November the 9th, Memphis at Clippers. Would you call them rivals? I mean, I know they played each other a couple times in the playoffs.
No.
I mean, I don't know if there's a dislike there, but I know that they've faced off quite a few times.
No, I don't really see anything there. I would just say, you know, another interesting matchup would be Toronto at Miami. Two teams that could go either direction.
It's the problem with November basketball is that, you know, it's the beginning of the season, it's fresh and new, everyone kind of pays close attention. But at the end of the day, they're the least important games.
And the least important, but that's how you set up your roster. That's how you know who can and can't do anything. And if you start off slow, really slow, and if you don't make adjustments, you'll be the first one fired.
Good. All right, and that's going to be finishing off this one. I hope everybody enjoys as regular season goes along. On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Brady.